Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
In 1994, the African nation of Rwanda was plunged into darkness. 100 days of violence sparked by a complex political struggle. 800,000 people murdered. A genocide, it's actually been called. 14 years later, the nation's still picking up the pieces, and there's a number of reconciliation projects going on. And one of the most successful so far is actually a project run by the Bible Society called Hands for Hope. It's actually been so successful, it's caught the attention of the Rwandan government. Dr. Charles Murugandi is the Minister for Cabinet Affairs in Rwanda, and he's in Australia, and he's dropped by Open House. It's lovely to have you here, Dr. Murugandi.
Thank you for inviting me to be...
Welcome to our nation. Before we start talking about the Hands for Hope projects, interesting to hear your background yourself. If the details I've got are actually correct, you actually were a refugee as a child.
Oh, yes. The 1994 genocide was simply a climax of a series of massacres, which started in 1959, when I was 1 year old, and forced my parents to seek asylum in Burundi, where I grew up. I was only able to come back to Rwanda in 1994 when I was 36 years old. Mm-hmm. So we lived in a refugee camp. It was very difficult to go to school. And when we went to school, Burundi being a country with limited opportunities for secondary school, it was even more difficult for refugees to be admitted in secondary schools. Refugees had very limited access to health services. We grew up with those frustrations, and it is probably partly this frustration that kept our desire to go back to Rwanda alive and eventually pushed us into fighting for our rights, and eventually we recovered our rights to citizenship in 1994.
Mm. You mentioned you went back to Rwanda in 1994. Did you lose many family members yourself in the Rwandan genocide, so to speak?
Yes, because... though my immediate family, my parents and brothers and sisters were living as refugees in Burundi or elsewhere, we had aunts, uncles, cousins who had stayed in Rwanda and died in the genocide. Mm-hmm. We grew up hearing about them and always desiring to see them one day.
Yes.
Maybe I don't know how they looked like, but it is something that caused a lot of grief. I would have loved to have seen them, to have lived with them.
Yes.
When the opportunity of going back to Rwanda offered itself to me.
Yes. When did you get back? At what stage in 1994, did you come back before or after the genocide?
Personally, I arrived immediately after the genocide was stopped. The Rwandese Patriotic Front, which fought against the genocidal forces and eventually defeated them, called on all of us to come, especially those of us who had the education, to come and help in the rebuilding of the country. I was then working at Howard University in Washington. I was a professor, a researcher at Howard University, and I felt compelled to go back to my country and give my small contribution to the rebuilding of my country.
So you would have had your own grief to work through, because you arrived right in the moment when you have lost personal members of your family.
Yeah, definitely. Not only members of my family, but people I related with. I had met some of them outside Rwanda, had built a friendship with them. I remember I would look at these beautiful hills of Rwanda. Rwanda is a very beautiful country, but whenever I would look at those hills and realize that every one of them has a mass grave full of people, tears would come out of my eyes. So we had to pass through that terrible time. And I would even say that all of us, at one point or another, had to ask ourselves if Rwandans were human beings. But I later on found an answer in the fact that though during the 1994 genocide, Rwanda was totally abandoned by the international community, and we had to find courage within ourselves, resource and sacrifice to fight and stop the genocide. That the fact that we were abandoned and we had to stop the genocide by ourselves was in itself an answer to that serious question we were asking ourselves if we were human beings, because we realized that, yes, we are capable of wickedness, but we are also capable of goodness. A lot of Rwandans sacrificed themselves to fight and stop the genocide and save the lives of those who are alive now.
Yes.
And this kind of restored our humanity.
Yeah. Dr. Charles Murugandi is the Minister for Cabinet Affairs in the Rwandan government. He's with us on Open House, theopenhouse.net.au, for the podcast. How would you describe the mood and the feeling of Rwanda now? And how are relationships between Hutus, Tutsis, etc.?
The mood and the relationship now between different communities of our country is definitely much better than what it was 14 years ago. We have made a lot of progress in reconciliation, in rebuilding the unity that once characterized Rwanda. Maybe if I can digress a bit, Rwanda is a very old country. It's a country that existed long before the colonial powers divided Africa to themselves. Basically, we have attained the level of nationhood whereby every individual, every Rwandan, was free to move freely in the country and establish himself or herself wherever he wanted. And that's why though we talk of Hutus and Tutsis and Twa, there isn't any division, geographical division of our country into a land for Hutu, a land for Tutsi, and a land for Twa. We live intermingled, and we also share the same language, the same culture, to the extent that it is really an abuse of terminology when we refer to the Tutsis and the Twa and the Hutu as ethnic groups, because if we were different ethnic groups, we would be speaking different languages, we would be having different culture, we would be living in different portion of our territories. Based on that historical fact, we have been engaged in an effort of restoring this unity, this harmony that used to characterize our country before the divide and rule that was practiced by the colonial powers.
Okay.
I can really say that though we were against big odds, within 100 days we lost 1 million of our people, but we put in place conditions that are slowly making it possible to live together peacefully and to reconcile. We put in place a commission in charge of unity and reconciliation, which has been conducting grassroots discussions whereby members of the community sit together and discuss about our past, looking at where we as a country went wrong, how it happened and what caused it, and how we can overcome it. But We are also helped by different other programs by the churches or other Christian organizations like the African Evangelistic Enterprise are supported by the Bible Society.
Yes.
And other Christian organizations.
There's a number that have been coming in and helping, isn't there? There's Hope Rwanda movements and those kinds of things. And then at one stage we heard about maybe even Rwanda becoming the first purpose-driven country because of the influence of Rick Warren's Purpose-Driven Life book, actually, on the country.
Yes. We are really blessed to have a visionary leader. Our president is truly an exceptional person who has a vision for the country, who is committed to not only reconciling the people of Rwanda, but for a purpose, for uplifting them out of poverty and taking them to a level of prosperity. And he once read the book by Rick Warren, and he said, "I would want this pastor to come to Rwanda and talk to my people because this is a man I really can identify with, and I would want him to come and be involved in Rwanda." And so he invited him, and he found in Rwanda a country that is committed to move forward, committed to have a purpose of self-improvement. Yeah. And
but it sounds like almost wanting to base that on Christian values and biblical truth, though, from what we can see.
Yes, yes.
Well, certainly open to the influence thereof.
Yeah. The president once said that he was telling Rick Warren that he's written about the purpose-driven church, and then the purpose-driven life, and then jokingly say, "I want you to write about the purpose-driven country and this country should be Rwanda." So that's how the expression came. If you look at a country like ours, probably in every village you have a church, and every Sunday, maybe 90% of the population goes to church.
Is that high? That high? 90%?
Yes. And these people come out of their own volition. If the government would partner with the church to deliver a message, be it a message of reconciliation or even a transformational message like fighting against AIDS, or If the government would partner with the churches, then whatever you want to bring to the people would reach the people more easily than if you were to use the government structures, because the people would not respond to any call by the government the way they will respond
to call by the church pastors,
the church pastors or priests. So that's how we are trying really to partner with the churches in delivering our government programs.
Yes, it's amazing. Of course, I have to ask this question because some people will be thinking it in their minds, you know, with a country with 90% of the population going to church, how did something as horrific as the genocide in 1994 even happened, though? How could Christians have actually done that to each other, so to speak?
Yeah, that is a very difficult question. It means that people are going to church like a habit, and they are not transformed by the message from the Bible,
which is a problem that all of our countries actually face,
and many countries are in the same predicament. Because if you look at what happened in Germany in 1939 to 1945, I think all Germans were Christian. I think probably 100% of them were baptized.
Horrible thing even to say, isn't it?
Yeah. It shows that though we are churchgoers, not everybody is really a committed Christian. living the message that Jesus Christ left with us.
Yes. Key point.
And I think it all starts with our leaders. Even the pastors are not, the priests are not. And I think once the leadership has failed, then automatically the sheep will be like without a shepherd.
Yes, yes. Dr. Charles Murugandhi is the Minister for Cabinet Affairs in the Rwandan government. He's with us tonight on the Open House. Your personal history and then the history of your country is actually fascinating. Now there are some projects that are being put in place to help bring reconciliation after the 1994 horrors that we actually saw right around the world, and yet the rest of the world did nothing to actually go and help you. One of those programs is one that we actually have just mentioned before that's run by the Bible Society and African Enterprise in partnership. It's called Hands for Hope. And from what I understand, it's actually a literacy program, primary school children learning to read and write and also being taught biblical principles of forgiveness and reconciliation along those lines. Now, you as a government are quite happy to support that, and we can understand now why, as you've just been sharing something of the history and the, I guess, the ethos and character of Rwanda as it is. Why is it working?
I think the program in itself is aiming at two purposes. It's not really only a literacy program, but it is, first and foremost, a reconciliation program. But being delivered through literacy, it is achieving also the other purpose of helping the children and even their parents to learn how to read and write. As it is called in Rwanda, the program is called The Rwanda I Want to Live In. They are helping our kids in primary school to grow up with positive values, values of love, values of acceptability, accepting each other, forgiveness, living in peace with others. And it is based on biblical stories. It is teaching our children positive values as God wants us to to have them. It is teaching them to read and write, but it is also helping achieve reconciliation. It's not a theory. It's even practical.
Yes, yes. So it's hitting a whole bunch of bases all at once, isn't it?
Yes. It was being tested in 5 of the 30 districts of Rwanda, and we felt we should encourage the initiators of this program, notably the Bible Society and the African Evangelistic Enterprise, to expand the program into the 30 districts of our country to touch all the schools of our country. Whatever we can do in terms of economic development, social development, if it is not built on a reconciled people, a united people, it would be like this story in the Bible of someone who built a house on a moving sand. So the rock we want to build our country on is the rock of reconciliation, unity. And there is no better place than starting with our children, because they are our future country. We may not be able to completely change the minds and hearts of old people. You know, for the genocide to happen, former governments invested in dehumanizing the Tutsis. You know, in our schools, teachers would tell their classes that Tutsis are like snakes, they are untrustworthy people, you should not be in business with them, you should not marry them. The way the Nazi regime did against the Jews. For people who were exposed to that kind of brainwashing for 35 years, it might not be easy to change them.
Yes.
Therefore, we need to invest in the children.
Yes, absolutely.
And grow a new generation with better values. That's why we value a program like the one run by the Bible Society and the African Evangelistic Enterprise, because it is targeting our youth, educate our younger generation to grow up in positive values.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for joining us on Open House tonight. Do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your time here in our country too. That's Dr. Charles Murugandi. He is the Minister for Cabinet Affairs in the Rwandan government. And just hear that, we're talking about a Christian-run program, Bible Society, African Enterprise running it, and you've got a minister from the government of a country saying, we would like to see our children go through this program to help them reconcile after such a horrific moment 14 years ago. So it's called the Hands for Hope program. And if you want to support it, what a great opportunity. What an amazing opportunity to actually be a part of changing the direction of a country right now. Bible Society New South Wales are the ones to make contact with. BibleSocietyNSW.com.au is the website. You can find out more about it there. What an amazing opportunity we have to be part of a country's future development by investing in their children now. BibleSocietyNSW.com.au for more.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.